Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Sunday, October 1st, first show of October, as the year just seems to fly by. As we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Week number two for the NFL. Improvement, but there are still some players who are kneeling, and I just think this dilemma is going to continue for the NFL until they get back to playing football. Secretary Tillerson is in China talking North Korea. I thought it was interesting today the president got involved, but sometimes I wonder, I think sometimes that Trump does these things because he wants to keep North Korea guessing. I don't know. It was very interesting. I'm anxious to hear what Bill has to say about that. Another bad week for the GOP and Obamacare. They came close, but they once again couldn't do it. We had terror in Canada. We had terror in France within hours of each other. Pretty scary situation. This is something new. We're into brand new territory now with Dr. Seuss, you know, the kids' books that so many of our kids used to read. Now, all of a sudden, we just learned this week that is a racist book in a confrontation between the librarian and the first lady. Absolutely insane what is going on in some of these schools. Bill had a very interesting note about Mr. Mueller and the number of Democrats on his team. We'll talk a little bit about that. And, of course, another big story in the last 48 hours is the mayor of Puerto Rico, of San Juan, Puerto Rico, has decided to get into a fight with Trump. And this is a mayor, of course, who has very strong leanings to the left, including a great admiration of the Castro brothers in Cuba. She was also very active on this Lopez Rivera terrorist campaign last year. So this lady is clearly from the left. And she seems to be on some kind of an agenda, or as President Trump suggested, maybe she got her instructions from people in the Democrat Party. Well, let's say hello to our good friend Bill. It's actually very pretty here, Bill. How is it in New York?
It's actually beautiful. We've had beautiful weather, and the only thing ruining it is politics.
That's exactly right. All we need is for Al Gore to show up today in New York and tell you that it's all a big fake, that it's going to get warm any day now, Bill.
Well, there's no question about that. And I think Al is on his way, and he travels in a bikini because it's so hot outside. But I'll tell you, I could use a little weather news now after all of the football news. It is really something to watch a sports league self-destruct like that. And
yes,
it was already in trouble. It was already facing declining revenues, declining audience,
right,
controversy over the way players were treated and their injuries. And then to have something like this happen and handled not very well, I think. I think that the NFL mm-hmm. should have reminded players that they have an obligation to treat the flag with respect. And they didn't, because they were afraid of the players, exactly what Trump said, because they were afraid of the people supporting the players, and afraid of demonstrations and local mm-hmm. government. And I think you have a real mess. I think that there has obviously been a decline in viewership, a decline in patronization of the stadium. Many of these stadiums were built largely with public funds, or at least helped by public funds. Very bad situation. You know what it reminded me of? When Jackie Robinson was brought up in 1947, one of the reasons that they picked Robinson, they had a choice of a number of African-American players because the Brooklyn Dodgers wanted to integrate the team, not because they were, great integrationists, but because there was a growing black population in Brooklyn and they wanted them in the game. They wanted the receipts. And they Branch Rickey was a very smart man, and he knew he had to have a player who could avoid politicizing the moment, and a player who would turn the other cheek when the bad guys came out, like Ben Chapman of the Philadelphia Phillies, and started using racial language. And Robinson was that man. And one of the great contributions Robinson made to baseball was that he integrated it without politicizing it.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And you were, obviously growing up there in Brooklyn and saw the whole thing yourself. I think that, I was hoping that by this week that we would be back at playing football, which is, of course, why we watched this game in the first place.
I remember and, that, yes.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, it used to be, there used to be a time when we used to watch the football game and not to get lectured or whatever. And I thought after last week, and last week was pretty bad for the ratings, I figured, well, the teams would sort of get together in the clubhouse and say, hey, guys, this is dividing us. This is giving us a distraction. So let's get back to playing football. And if anybody wants to do politics, well, you got lots of time during the week to do it. Well, they didn't do that, Bill. At least some of them did. I mean, we had a game here in Dallas, and it seemed pretty typical game. No politics. There was a game, a few other games where everything seemed normal. But a couple of other places, San Francisco apparently had a lot of players kneeling. They're not winning either, by the way. I just wanted to connect that. The teams that seem to be doing all the kneeling are the teams that are not winning, like the Jacksonville Jaguars. The teams that, they're not drawing either. So it's kind of interesting how that works. But I would have thought by now they would have gotten their act together. Last week, the coach of the Steelers didn't bring out the team. And one of the reasons he didn't, and he suggested in some public statements, Bill, that this was actually dividing the team, that you had players, taking sides and arguing with each other. And he said, it's dividing us. Our job is to be one team when we take that field. So even in that sense, it's hurting the league, that it's dividing the teams, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct. And, you would think that somebody would have come up with a creative solution by now and said to the players, look, you have a First Amendment right to protest off the field. You don't have that right, by the way, when you're employed by a private organization, which can basically order you not to on their time. But somebody should have, some manager or coach should have said, look, protest off the field, have a rally, have a meeting, have something, and we will come and join you, but off the field. And that would have been fine. That would have been fine. But we have a tradition in this country of not politicizing sports, and that tradition was broken, and I think the American people are not happy about this. They really aren't. Now, of course, there are these polls that get taken that show, well, more people are supportive of the players today than a year ago. I think it depends on how the question is asked. There was a poll that asked the question several different ways and got very dramatically different answers. I think still, without any question, the majority of the country is turned off. Receipts are down. I would imagine advertising dollars are going to be affected. You sent me a very interesting article that many people on Wall Street are fed up with it. Well, they have a lot to do with financing. And remember that many of the stadiums that are built with help from public funds or tax breaks. That may not be so easy to get anymore.
No, you're exactly right, because many of these cities have problems to begin with. They're in deep trouble to begin with. But I just find that there's a certain lack of common sense behind all of this, and that's what I don't get. There's a total, complete lack of common sense in what these players are doing or what the league is tolerating. Because what I was hoping today, there was a game that the Miami Dolphins were playing in London today. And I think they were playing the New Orleans Saints. Everybody in the Saints stood up, and it was fine, no problem. But then there were a couple of guys on the Miami Dolphins side that did kneel. And I would have loved to have had the general manager of the Dolphins say, hey, we don't do that. You guys signed a contract, which they did. The union has a contract that says they have to line up in a particular way before the game, and you guys are in violation of that agreement, so we're going to suspend you. If a general manager would do something like that, I think this is over immediately, Bill. And
well,
you know, I was
but he You're right, but he would be called a racist.
Well, he may very well be called a racist. I'm sure that's what he will be called. But at some point, it seems to me the people who exercise the authority have to exercise it. And if they're going to allow, if you're going to allow players to violate the agreement that they have signed, this is not Donald Trump's agreement. This is the agreement that was negotiated by the players. I'm assuming the union and the league. And if they're going to violate it without consequence, then I don't know. I think you lose control of the situation, Bill.
I think you do too. And also, it was in a way hilarious to watch American football players standing for "God Save the Queen," which is the anthem of a nation that colonized Africa. It's such hypocrisy. By the way, can anyone explain to me why football games are being played in London?
I'll tell you why. It is really – the players hate it, by the way. The union hates it because they're doing it for money. They believe that there's a market – in Europe, which apparently there is a growing market for the NFL, and they think that by taking a game to London, that increases the interest. Well, that may be true, but the players hate it because it's a seven-hour flight, and not just seven-hour flight, but I mean the time zones and all of that, and it's a burden on them physically. So the players hate it, and they always the reason that Jacksonville plays in London so much, Bill, is because they have a very hard time drawing in Jacksonville.
Yes.
So that team gives up the home game for London. But I agree with you. I think it's an insanity to do that to your players who have to travel across the Atlantic and then come back here to play a game next on Sunday. I mean, it's pretty rough physically for the players, Bill. Although, from a money standpoint, apparently there is money there, and I think what they're really trying to do, they're trying to really get into the television market, but they already have that, from what I understand. The league has a pretty big following in British television, to say the least. But players hate it. From everything I've read, they hate it because it's just too much travel, Bill.
I can understand that, and it's also a sad commentary on the ability of teams to draw in their home markets, and that ability is not going to get any better because of these political demonstrations. You'll notice, for example, that you don't see black fans coming out in support of the players. I mean, you'd think during these demonstrations that the stadium would at least have an increase in the number of minority fans coming to support the players, but you don't see it.
Yeah, I would love to see a study of the demographics of the fans, because when you watch an NFL game, you see a disproportionate number of white fans.
That's right.
And I mean, you take a city like Baltimore, which is more than half black, and yet when you watch the football game, it looks like the people from the suburbs are the ones who go to the game. And so I don't know what it all means. I think a lot of black Americans are proud of their country, and they don't like this anymore. And they don't like this any more than anybody else does. I really think that's the reason, Bill.
And a large number of black families also have military histories.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And
so
once
again, I think Trump basically got it right. He may not have used language that we would have used. It's interesting today that one of his big supporters in the press, Mr. Goodwin of the New York Post, wrote an article saying Trump basically gets the things right, but he doesn't express himself all that well. And he kind of lacks some of the political skills. And there's some truth to that. But he does instinctively get what the people are saying. And I think he has nailed it that they really don't like this. I think they also feel it's a little strange to watch a guy making $9 million a year protesting.
Right. That's right. Well, and saying that he is he's being mistreated in some way. That's the part that bugs me. I mean, if they're that interested in social justice or whatever, and that's fine, there's nothing wrong with that feeling, then they ought to do it on their own time, and they ought to do it during the week. But you don't get the sense, and again, I'm generalizing here, but it's a gut feeling of mine. You don't get the sense that these players during the week or in the off season go back to the inner city to do anything. You kind of get the feeling they go to practice, they go to the game, and then they go to the suburbs where they live in very nice neighborhoods. That's the feeling I have. I could be wrong, but that's the feeling I have, Bill.
I think that's absolutely true. I think they will occasionally show up at some photo op, you know, for a charity. And some probably do some work. I think some probably do. But for the most part, they buy their mansions and the big cars, like players have always done, who've made a lot of money. And I certainly don't think that that these demonstrations have contributed in any way to any cause. I mean, presumably they originally were demonstrations against the police treatment of African Americans, a perfectly legitimate thing to discuss. But I think that there was so much anger about the way it was done that it destroyed that that very idea.
I think so. I don't think that these demonstrations have brought the country together, have fixed any of the problems, or begun communications to fix the problems. I think on the exact opposite. I think they've divided the country more, made people run to their corners more, and that's a shame because some of these problems are legitimate. But they're not being talked about because of the antics. But if this continues, Bill, I expect the league to take a real hit. And if Major League Baseball was smart, Major League Baseball would overdo patriotism now in the playoff games and make clear that there's not going to be any of this. There shouldn't be. I was thinking in Major League Baseball you have another difference too, and that is that a third of the players are now Latins. And so they're not caught up in the political debate. And on the contrary, most of them are pretty grateful that they're in the United States, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. That's it. And grateful to the fact that they got to a place in sports where they're making millions of dollars.
That's right. No, you're exactly right.
They're not going to get much sympathy.
No, not... Not back in their own countries either, because these guys are heroes back there. Now, they might get involved in some politics back home. That's fine. Like a lot of the Puerto Rican players have gotten involved in some of the recovery in Puerto Rico. But that's fine. That to me, that's not really politics. That's just doing community work. That's what I would describe it that. Bill, before we take a break, I wanted to bring up the point about Secretary Tillerson being in China. And he's talking apparently North Korea with the Chinese. And I thought President Trump was interesting today. He tweeted that Tillerson is wasting his time talking to North Korea. And, you know, either Trump and Tillerson are not on the same page, or this is a strategy by Trump to keep the North Koreans and the Chinese guessing, Bill. I don't know how else to explain it. How do you explain it?
I think you've explained it very well, and that is it's unexplainable. I mean, if he and the secretary are not on the same page, that's something they should discuss privately, and Trump would be very wrong for going public. But on the other hand, it could be part of a strategy known as, you know, it's the old good cop, bad cop strategy, where Tillerson is talking peace and the president is talking war, and they don't know which one to believe, and it may frighten them enough to realize that this is a serious business. I would like to believe that that's the case, that it is a strategy. I would be horrified if I found out that Trump just got angry and went off on Tillerson publicly, because that is obviously something that no Secretary of State can accept for very long, and we would probably be seeing a resignation, although he did refer to Tillerson as our great Secretary of State. So I don't think there's any bad blood there. But, I you know, you'd sometimes wonder what's in Trump's mind. Is he a genius who is, you know, sees things that we don't see, or is he really just a buffoon who happened to be lucky to win an election against a weak candidate who doesn't really know how to govern? And I think that that question will certainly be answered at some point, but he's the most interesting candidate, or rather interesting president we've seen, potentially a great president, but potentially also a dangerous one.
Yeah, I was absolutely astonished, you know, when I hear that, you know, Secretary Tillerson is over there. And in fact, I think you posted on Urgent Agenda that we're now talking to North Korea, and within half a day you're talking about that maybe we're not, or that President Trump doesn't think we should be talking to Rocket
That's right.
Man. I mean, it is hard to follow, and I guess I'm hoping that this is part of a strategy where good cop, bad cop strategy. Well, let's hope so, because otherwise it is a little scary to have the situation. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Bill right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, as we like to do on Sundays. We're chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Virgin Agenda. Bill, I want to get off the politics for a second and go back to this day in 1962 when a fellow by the name of Johnny Carson became the host of, I think it was called The Tonight Show by that time already.
Yes, it was.
And then he did this, I guess, for the next 30 years, one of the most successful runs in television. And I know you had an association with him, so that's why I bring it up. But I also bring it up, Bill, in the context of the political humor today, or what they call political humor, that I find really pretty sick. You know, Carson had this monologue. I don't have to tell you about it. You were there. And it was hilarious. He would beat up everybody. And he would do it with a real charm that nobody got mad at him. You know, nobody's mother got mad at what Carson said about her son or daughter, but yet it was very funny, Bill. Now you watch the Emmys, and it's unwatchable. Political humor today is unwatchable, Bill.
That's right. Well, it's so filled with anger and bitterness and ignorance, and people feel they have to get up at the Oscars and perform their political shtick because it's expected of them, and you get invited to better parties if you do. But I stood on the side and watched Johnny Carson do many monologues when I was working on The Tonight Show. By the way, do you know why it's called The Tonight Show? It's called The Tonight Show because...
No, please tell me. Because that was a good question. I was going to ask you that.
Because a man named Weaver, who was Sigourney Weaver's father, Pat Weaver, and he is the one who developed that show and developed the morning show for NBC. The morning show was called Today. The evening show, he said, would be called Tonight. And then he had another show late at night called The Tomorrow Show, which is no longer with us. But it was those were the shows, and they were just named for times of the day. So that was his contribution. He was a very gifted man, Pat Weaver, and really created the early image of NBC, which began with the Today Show and a man named Dave Garraway, who you might remember. And that was really what led to that whole a series of shows with names like that. And of course, that the two, the Today Show and the Tonight Show, have lasted to this day. I mean, today I think went on the air in something like 1952. We're talking well more than a half a century ago.
Mm-hmm. And Carson was there till the early 90s. He probably could have stayed longer if he wanted to.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I think that NBC wanted him out by then.
Oh, really?
They started thinking in demographic terms, and they wanted a younger person to be in there to appeal to the young people. Jay Leno had been guest host of The Tonight Show many times, and he was the pig. He did a good job, I thought, but there's only one Johnny Carson. And, you know, it's very interesting to think that when you told the audience that it was on this day in 1962 that the Carson Show, or that Carson took over The Tonight Show, remember that was the same month as the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right, yes. Exactly,
so he took
right,
over at a very, very difficult time for humor.
Now, just one quick question about humor on The Tonight Show. Did Johnny just get the jokes from the writers, or did he come in in the day and say, I would like to have a joke tonight about Nixon, or I'd like to have a joke tonight about Humphrey, or something that happened in the news, that he would give you a tip for a joke, or did he just get them from the writers?
Well, I was a talent coordinator when there was a separate writing staff. I know that he had ideas of his own, and he had jokes of his own, but then he would get jokes also from the writers. I think it was a very, very somewhat a freewheeling relationship within a very disciplined context. But Johnny was always known as a man who could create his own humor, and then he had a staff who added to it with their jokes. So it was both.
Yeah, no, I just thought the man was so talented that I every once in a while on YouTube you can catch a tidbit of some of his interviews, and I thought he was extremely, extremely talented. But the political humor of that time, late 60s, 70s, 80s, there were lots of political things going on, and yet the humor on the Carson show, I always thought was so well done. You could laugh at it. You didn't have to worry about, you didn't have to sit there and realize that Carson was a partisan on either side like you could on the Emmys. I mean, that was despicable on the Emmys. Thankfully, nobody watched it. But see, Bill, let me ask you about that again, getting back to the NFL and ratings. At some point, advertisers have to worry about this. I know I mentioned it before. I think it was last week. But at some point, advertisers, don't they get these numbers too? And every day or every week, and they look at the drop in ratings, and they say, hey, guys, why is this? I mean, the advertisers have a lot more influence here than maybe these people understand, Bill.
They do have a great deal of influence. In fact, in the early days of television, many people don't realize this, advertisers brought in the shows to the networks. There were no programming departments. An advertiser would develop a show and bring it to the network, with the advertising all arranged, and the network would either take it or not. But yes, you're quite right. I imagine advertisers are getting concerned, although the rates are based to a degree on audience size. So at least if the audience shrinks, they get a bit of a discount. And I think that many advertisers are a little skittish about being associated with anything political. I mean, if this gets worse or if it continues, I think some advertisers will be under pressure to drop their advertising during the Super Bowl. At the same time, they're under pressure from the other side. If they do drop advertising, they could easily be called racists. And I think they're in a very, very tight position today, as are the owners of the teams.
Yes.
They're getting pressure from all sides.
I was thinking, for example, of General Motors. General Motors makes automobiles, obviously, for different demographics and different parts of the country. Trucks are very popular here in Texas in the South. Ford and Dodge and GM, they all make big trucks. So when they advertise these big trucks, they're advertising to an audience down here, maybe everywhere, but certainly more outside of the cities. And they cannot be happy advertising, a Ford 150, which is a very popular truck down here, to an audience that turns it off because they don't want to hear Trump jokes. I don't know. Maybe I'm not making any sense when I say this, but I think you know what I mean. I mean, you sell to the whole country. You just don't sell to people who voted for one guy or the other, Bill.
That's right, and I think that they want to sell to the whole country, and by politicizing the sport, they're doing exactly what some news organizations have done. They are taking points off the board. They're eliminating half their audience before they even begin. It's like CNN, which really does not have very good ratings right now, and that is one of the reasons it is so completely an anti-Trump network that I think they've turned an awful lot of people off. So you're absolutely right. But I don't know what the future here is going
to
be. Football has already had some troubled times, a lot of controversy over injuries, a lot of campaigns in schools around the country to ban football because it's too dangerous. So it's gotten a bad press, and that was even before this started. Now, now people say, well, it isn't so much now a protest against police actions against African Americans. It's now an anti-Trump protest. Well, that may be, but that's not going to attract much of an audience either, because if there's one group that is probably rather pro-Trump, it would be football fans.
Right, exactly. No, you're exactly right. I would have to say there's probably more fans, more football fans in Oklahoma than in some liberal district in New York City, Bill.
Well, absolutely. Well, look, in New York City, the idea of grown men wearing helmets pushing each other down would be regarded as something quaint, and potentially a fascist. I mean, they probably regard it as a fascist sport. It's interesting, though, by the way, and I think we mentioned this before we went on the air, that there were demonstrations. There were the knee demonstrations in San Francisco today. For the 49ers, and the fact is that it was in San Francisco. I think is rather amusing. In San Francisco, they probably cheer these things. I mean, they're going to get a very odd group of fans coming to the games in San Francisco to cheer on the kneeing.
Right. That's right. That's right. No, this is going to get very interesting. Well, speaking of another character, let's go to the city of San Juan, Puerto Rico, mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico. I, by the way, I have several friends. A couple of my cousins were born in Puerto Rico because when my father's younger brother left Cuba, he ended up in Puerto Rico where he set up an architectural firm. And so my two cousins were born, two of my four cousins were born in Puerto Rico in the 1960s. So I'm very familiar with the culture there. Is actually very similar to Cuban culture, but for the last 10 years or so, the island of Puerto Rico has really been declining in a lot of ways. Many people have left. My uncle eventually left and retired in the United States before he passed away, and the island is not doing very well. There's a lot of corruption. It's a lot of bad management, and now you have this electric grid. The island is bankrupt. I mean, there's just a lot of problems with Puerto Rico. So now you have this mayor stepping into the picture. She apparently did not have time, Bill, to go to FEMA meetings, but she had time to do interviews with CNN and MSNBC for almost 24 hours. I thought that was kind of interesting. And she's criticizing President Trump here and there. I don't have a problem with criticism that is constructive. I think we all need that. But I think this lady was on a mission, and she may have done herself a lot more harm, because even other people, I mean, you now have other people within the island of Puerto Rico criticizing this lady. And the more we learn about this lady, Bill, as you posted at Urgent Agenda today, I mean, this is not exactly she makes Bernie Sanders look like a centrist, Bill.
That's right. She's a left-wing Democrat. She was a very heavy supporter of Hillary Clinton, really. She apparently, at least it has been reported, supports Fidel Castro in Cuba, which is not exactly a hot cause these days. And she said some very nice things about a Puerto Rican terrorist who was recently released from prison by Barack Obama. This has not gotten her a very good press. So my first impression was when this happened is that we'll be seeing her without doubt speaking to the Democratic National Convention, and I think that will probably happen anyway. But I think that some of the reporting since she made the statements has been so negative that I think she may in the end have done herself more harm than good.
Well, just a couple of thoughts, Bill, just to keep in mind, the last mayor who got into an argument with a president of the United States about recovery was the mayor of New Orleans, and I think he's in jail. So
Mayor Ray Nagin, yes,
that's right. So we don't know what's going to happen to this lady. I've heard a lot of things about her. I don't have it all complete, but I've heard a lot of things about this lady that she could have some real questionable issues coming up. But I think what she's really rehearsing for, Bill, I am convinced she's rehearsing for a show on MSNBC, or she wants to be Jorge Ramos' sidekick on Univision.
Yes, she's the Ed McMahon of the...
Yes, that's it. That's it. Because other than that, I don't really see much reason for doing what she's doing. I mean, she's like... Because the problem, Bill, is that when you criticize Trump like this, when you come out and you criticize Trump, you're really criticizing the men and women who are on the ground working. That's what you're
right.
really criticizing. So if you work for FEMA and you hear this kind of stuff and you know it's not true, well, how does that make you feel, Bill?
It makes you feel terrible. They have thousands of troops on the ground, reservists, National Guard people on the ground. They have lots of FEMA workers who are in there, and I'm sure they'd rather be somewhere else, working very hard. There may have been some, you know, poor execution in the first days. Remember that they are working in an environment, as you pointed out, where you have a lot of corruption, where you've had a lot of problems. Puerto Rico itself is bankrupt. And, you know, it's very much reminiscent of Hurricane Katrina, which hit New Orleans, where you had a terrible city government, just awful, and you had a terrible state government. It was pointed out at the time that there were four hurricanes that during that period that hit Florida in very rapid succession and were handled well because Jeb Bush was a governor, and he was a real governor, and he handled it well. Puerto Rico is not well run. You can tell just by this mayor of San Juan. I mean, she seems a bit of a nutcase. As I understand it, the electric company in Puerto Rico is way behind the times. And, in fact, I think Trump suggested that the Florida electric company come in to take over and to try to make things right. The island was in no way prepared for a hurricane or for any other disaster. And while Trump may have said some insensitive things, I think it was foolish of him to say that people want this all done for them. He was very accurate in talking about the management and the incompetence. And the fact of the matter is that the way an area handles a natural disaster is a reflection of how well organized that area is. And this is an area, a territory of the United States, that was not well organized at all.
No, not at all. In fact, this is where I think Bush got a raw deal in Katrina, because you saw what just happened in Florida, how well done that was, what happened here in Houston, how well done that was. And then you remember Katrina, how the local management was completely crazy. But the other thing about Puerto Rico, too, that makes it very unique, this is an island. When you had this happen in South Florida, you had obviously highways where you could bring in provisions and supplies very quickly to the area. The same in Houston. You didn't lose
yes.
all the electricity in Florida either, because obviously the power company was much more had been kept up and all of that. But I think one of the interesting things for me about Puerto Rico is these reports that Rivera has been doing out of Puerto Rico, and Rivera, I think, has been pretty fair so far in the coverage, pointing out that this power company was not properly maintained and that it was really in very bad shape. And there's never a good time to have a hurricane like this, but for Puerto Rico, this is certainly not a good time, Bill.
No, not at all. The state recently, as you know, announced its terrible financial problems, and I'm sure we'll be coming to ask for some help. That help now has to be magnified by the utter destruction of much of the island by these hurricanes. And one has to ask the question, this is, after all, a Caribbean island, about what the building codes must have been. The building codes must have been so lax that so much was destroyed. I mean, the hurricane hit other areas, and there was some damage, to be sure, but not on this level. And yet here is the mayor, and as you pointed out, she has not gone to any FEMA meetings, even though she was invited as the mayor of the capital city, the largest city. She apparently does not do very much in terms of disaster relief, but as you pointed out again, that she does much in the way of television interviews.
And every other word out of her mouth is social justice. I was
yeah.
listening to her interview today, and she says, wherever I see an injustice, I have to say something. Well, okay, I understand that. But there's a lot more than injustice going on in Puerto Rico. There's a lot of incompetence, and people like her have not helped the situation. Now, with respect to President Trump, within a week, we've seen President Trump, in essence, pick fights with people. First,
yes,
the NFL. And now the mayor of San Juan. And I'm wondering if by sometimes attacking people so directly, he creates another problem for himself. I mean, I would not have said what he said about the NFL players, where he said, get that SOB off the field. I would have been more careful about my criticism of the mayor of San Juan. I mean, he had to say something because the mayor was going crazy on MSNBC and CNN. I mean, it was all Trump's fault. So she was going crazy, but still, he sometimes over. He sort of It's like he kills a fly with a machine gun. Sometimes.
That's it. Well, that's it. He's very heavy-handed, and you know you can criticize and take a stand, but the way he does it sometimes, I think you're absolutely right. It's self-destructive. He calls attention to himself, and he brings sympathy to the people he's criticizing. I mean, it's not necessary to refer to the players in the way he did, as you said. It's not even necessary to refer to the thug who leads North Korea as Rocket Man. If you want to refer to him as a petty dictator, that's fine. But, you know, this is a very serious matter. It may not end well. I just think that his manner sometimes causes him more trouble than it's worth.
No, I agree, and I think in both of these instances, I think that's the case. You mentioned, Bill, about Mr. Mueller and the fact that he's got so many Democrats on his team, which is a concern. But one of the concerns that I have with this whole investigation is, to the best of my knowledge, has a crime been committed, Bill?
I don't know. So far, nobody. I don't know what it is they're investigating, but they have all these prosecutors. And, he better find something, and that's one of the sad things about these offices, these special counsel offices, is that they are set up, they hire people, they cost millions and millions of dollars, and because of that, they are under pressure to find crimes. And that's not fair to the people who are targeted.
No, because the people who are targeted have to spend a lot of their own money to defend themselves. I mean, you remember the expenditures of the people during the Iran-Contra.
Oh, sure.
When, you know, Mr. Walsh was investigating all these people. A lot of people had to get, they had to create legal funds just to pay the bills. And the prosecutors don't have that problem because they got all the money in the world. So there's something wrong with the system. That's why I didn't like it when a prosecutor was named. I felt that it would have been better to let the Congress deal with it. The Congress has all the lawyers and all the committees, but at least you got two sides fighting with each other, Bill.
Yes, but it's a sordid process. It really is. Here is an area where, although he acted badly toward Jeff Sessions in his public comments, but Trump was right. He said, if I knew he would recuse himself, I never would have nominated him, because all Trump did, or rather all Sessions did, was create an enormous problem for the president he's serving without any real evidence presented thus far of a crime being committed. So I can understand Trump's anger at Sessions, but again, he didn't exactly express it in the most elegant way.
No, he seems to have a problem doing that, and I don't know if he's ever going to change in that sense, Bill.
I sometimes wonder
if that's just the way he's going to be for the 4 years or the 8 years that we get to have a President Trump. But I think sometimes he does create problems for himself that he shouldn't. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we've got a lot to get into with Bill. We're going to... This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. One more segment here with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, there was terror in Canada, terror in France, and it's amazing. I woke up Sunday morning, and within a couple of hours, Bill, both things happened. I mean, it's almost like they were like back to back. And the one in Canada was fascinating because that's a truck, somebody using a truck. And then, of course, the one in France was a knife. I do think some people were killed in France. I don't know about Canada.
Two women were killed in France.
In Canada or in France?
In France.
Yeah. And
there were some injuries in Canada, and we had the usual stupid statements by the authorities afterward. The guy used a method that has been used by ISIS. They found an ISIS flag in his car or in the truck. And immediately the police issued a statement saying, we don't think he was working with anybody else. Or it's, I think the phraseology was he was operating alone. That has become the standard line in these cases, that it's a lone wolf. You have nothing to be afraid of, people. It was just a lone wolf. There's no such thing as a lone wolf. Somebody radicalized this man. He didn't get up one morning and decide to be a jihadist. It isn't something that, you know, that it's not usually a family ambition or a prestigious position in society. Somebody radicalized him, but it will be played down. Now, I don't know what the effect in France will be, because they've had a number of terror attacks. France is a regular terrorist target. And some have tried to minimize it, but I think it's one after another that at some point they're going to have to recognize that this problem is going to get worse. It's not going to get better.
Well, and I'm not so sure Canada is any better. Now, they haven't had the same number, but Canada is a very open society.
Very.
And the current Prime Minister Trudeau, in the name of diversity, has opened up the country, but they're having a huge problem with Haitian refugees, Bill.
Yes, they're also having a new problem with Muslim refugees, that Muslim refugees now prefer Canada to the United States because they're afraid of Trump. So the Canada is being used, in effect, as a dumping ground for refugees, and I think a number of Canadian citizens don't like it. You know, isn't it shocking that they don't really like people just flooding into the country with no prospects and sometimes with some very strange ideas. So Trudeau was he's his father's son. Father was a leftist also. Trudeau is a little bit more pleasant version of it. But these are the leftist theoreticians who say, well, we shouldn't even have borders and we shouldn't even have checks, that people should live all over the world. But, you know, when people see the reality of what that means, they will perhaps become a little bit more conservative. I'd love to hear Justin Trudeau's statement about this incident. I hope it is up to snuff.
Well, I think he said something along the lines of, we're not going to let these people destroy. Diversity is our strength and all this kind of stuff, which is not true. Diversity is not the strength of Canada. Where do these people get these lines? Diversity is our strength. I mean,
well,
what does that mean anyway? What does that mean, Bill? Diversity
doesn't mean
is
anything.
Strength.
It doesn't mean
that's
anything.
It.
Japan fought World War II without any diversity. one did not rush to Japan to see other cultures. There was one culture, and that was it. And they were a very powerful and strong country. Diversity is a very nice thing to have. I like diversity. And
sure.
I like the idea of being with other cultures, but it is not the strength of a country. The strength of a country is not in the diversity of the people, but in the fact that people came here in the first place. Now, the ones who came here were adventurous. They were imaginative, always have been. They were the strong people who could sustain the immigrant experience. That's the strength of the country.
Right. No, I love that. Diversity is our strength. So, I'm still trying to figure out what that means. Because that's one of Prime Minister Trudeau's favorite lines. He mentions that it seems like every other time he gives a speech. Well, Bill, I'm sure you have a collection of Dr. Seuss books in your home. I think all of us who've had children at one point or another have seen those books. This week, those books became a matter of some rather incomprehensible controversy when a librarian, it just to set the table for people who may not know, the First Lady, I guess, donated some books to a school, And the librarian returned them, right? It's some sort of a program
where they give free books out to libraries.
Yeah. And the librarian returned them on the grounds that these were samples of white supremacy or something like that. And but then to make this even more comical, then we've got President Obama didn't have any problem with the books or Mrs. Obama. And then this lady herself, the librarian, had pictures of her with the books. I mean, this is hilarious, Bill, hysterical, this kind
of
nonsense.
They had pictures of her dressed in a Dr. Seuss costume. So apparently that didn't bother her. But now Dr. Seuss is racist. The Twitter sphere has been alive with cynicism about it because, as you just said, Michelle Obama used to read Dr. Seuss to school kids all the time. So
right.
I guess she's a racist also.
That's right. Yeah, that's the funny part. I guess Mrs. Obama and Mr. Obama are now racist too, and they're homophobes too, Bill, because they once said that marriage was between a man and a woman, but that's another subject. But to me, this is indicative of how silly these people have gotten, Bill.
Well, it's reaching the point now where fortunately people are laughing at it. I mean, maybe that's the first step on the road to reducing political correctness. Although the universities are doubling down. I mean, they regard diversity and multiculturalism as the heart of what they do. And I think some of our universities are getting increasingly less academic and more social, and that's not what a university should be.
No, you're exactly right. Looking at next week, Bill, we didn't get to the Obamacare and the GOP. I think that's pretty much dead for the time being. But looking ahead at next week, are there any stories, anything in particular that you want to keep an eye on?
Well, yes. First of all, we should always remember we are at the beginning of the 2018 midterms, and you're going to be seeing stories week after week about nominees, about potential nominees, about polling, which may or may not indicate who's ahead in that race. I certainly would be following that. I would be following Rex Tillerson's trip to China and the president's very dramatic statement in opposition to Korea. I'm interested to see what will happen when President Trump goes to Puerto Rico on Tuesday. He is not going to play golf or to go on vacation. And I would be interested to see whether the mayor of Puerto Rico shows up when he visits. And I think it's a possibility she won't, and that will be a disaster for her politically. And the usual run of issues. I mean, two terrorist attacks today. I think we have to be on guard that these people are still operating and operating very effectively.
Yeah. And I also next week, I think the unfolding of this situation in Catalonia in Spain, where they were going to have a vote today and it was shut down. They've had a lot of confrontations with the local police. Not the local police, but the federal army. I'm just wondering how that's going to end up. I mean, it doesn't look very pretty right now, Bill.
It doesn't, and I think it's one of those stories that came right out of the blue. I wasn't aware of what was going on there. But some 300 people or more were injured in clashes with police today. So, it is a story to be followed. I also think that another story to be followed is the attempt by Bernie Sanders to advance single payer, which is basically socialism, and make it apply to the healthcare system. I don't think he's going to get too far, but you never know what could happen, especially if Congress flips next year.
Yes, that's right. It could become a rallying cry for the Democrats, but I think I can also see where it could divide many Democrats. It's one of those crazy things. We'll have to see how it unfolds. Well, Bill, I'm going to let you go back to Dr. Seuss so you can finish reading that.
Well, it's something I've always wanted to do. I think I'll take a knee while doing it, though, just to protest.
That's it.
Well,
you're reading Dr. Seuss. Take a knee and put your fist up in the air and say you're doing
right.
it for social justice, Bill.
Absolute social justice. And I am all for social justice. I want social justice for the mayor of San Juan. Social justice with her would be to give her a job somewhere in a small government agency in southwest New Mexico. And just leave her there.
That's right. You sometimes wonder, in retrospect, what kind of a job she would have been given under a Clinton administration. I mean, this is a lady that we could have been seeing a lot of had Hillary Clinton won the election.
Oh, yes.
I was thinking about that today.
Yes. Well, I think she made a big mistake. She would have done a much better thing had she really gone all out and helped with the recovery. But the fact that she didn't even go to a FEMA meeting, I think, is disgraceful.
Yeah, and it was George Stephanopoulos today on ABC who asked her that question. And I thought that was very interesting that it happened on ABC this morning, where she said, yes, I have not gone to any meetings. She said she's been very busy. Well, maybe, I guess, you know, going from one interview to another will wear
That's right.
you out, Bill. That will really
That's right.
wear you out.
Yes, and you know, I kind of wonder, how does she get from one interview to another if things are so bad? I mean, does she have a limo that takes her around? Maybe she has a special route around the hurricane damage. I don't know.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Maybe she's got maybe she has some bicycles from Mao, you know, when she was a strong supporter of Mao. And maybe she has her bicycle from her younger days. Have a great week, Bill. Thank you again for joining us. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you. And keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to next week when we'll be talking about knees again.
That's right. All right, Bill. Good night.
Good night.
Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, our good friend. Always a lot of fun chatting with Bill. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.